Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. If you've listened to our previous episodes, and we hope you have, you know that the road to the inbox can be tough these days. New deliverability challenges seem to pop up constantly, making it harder for senders to reach their subscribers. And unfortunately, there are no shortcuts, but there are rewards for senders who follow best practices. Take, for example, the Certified Senders Alliance, or the CSA. In the email world, the CSA is kind of like being on the VIP list at your favorite club. In today's episode, we'll dive into how organizations like the CSA set standards for the email ecosystem and separate the good senders from the bad apples. And since the CSA operates predominantly in Germany, we'll share tactics German senders employ that marketers in all countries can use to stay ahead of deliverability challenges.
So, I'd like to introduce today's guest. This is going to be a good one because Sebastian Kluth and I spent a number of years as colleagues at ReturnPath. The last 4 years or so has been as technical lead at the CSA, and we've remained, you know, industry peers. But, you know, what can I say? He's a friend of mine as well. And, you know, we've definitely sunk a load of beers together over the years, plus a few gin and tonics, because that's his favorite tipple. And hopefully in sort of 20 or 30 minutes after we've given him a grilling today, we'll still be friends. But Seb, it's really great to have you join us on Email After Hours today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for your invitation. And it's fun and it's good that we meet up here and have a talk about email deliverability and email standards.
So let's do it. Let's talk about the CSA. Let's start with the basics. What is the organization's primary mission?
In a nutshell, the elevator pitch would mean we create and enable quality standards and promote new technologies for commercial emails. So that's basically our elevator pitch. But what does that mean? I think that that is similar to some other organizations in the market as well who target the same. We all talk about best practices. Everyone claims to use best practices. But if you look around in the email ecosystem and you receive your personal newsletters every day, you sometimes scratch your head and say, okay, I don't know if this really is best practice following. So what we do, or what we try to do, is to bring together the senders and the receivers of the market and try to be the best mentor role in the middle. The biggest asset on top is we also create transparency using data feedback from the mailbox providers that sending into the receiver side from the sender's perspective isn't a black hole anymore. And we provide feedback in terms of data to constantly improve the performance of email deliverability.
100%. So when we talk about those quality standards that you define and enforce for your community, does that mean that the CSA as an organization has a clearly defined view on what a good sender looks like versus a bad sender?
We're not thinking in those categories like a good or a bad sender. We really think about certified versus non-certified senders. Our goal is not to exclude someone from the email ecosystem. As long as someone willing to follow best practices, to improve, to understand that it's not I'm sending the email and the mailbox provider has to accept them, as long as this fairness in understanding that the mailbox provider also has needs like protecting their own mailbox accounts, like protecting from viruses and all this kind of stuff. When this understanding happens, we are happy to support mass email senders as much as possible to make this platform a best-in-class platform for sure. We are automatically excluding the bad senders because real spammers are not interested in best practices at all. So we do that distinction, but we don't flag them.
Yeah, listen to our last episode. on email scams just to learn about how closely those real spammers are following those best practices. But you're right. And you mentioned Validity's certification program, but the Certified Senders Alliance is platform-based.
That's correct.
And we know that ESPs, some ESPs like Immersys, include CSA compliance as part of their customer contracts, even if the programs don't operate in Germany. So would you say they benefit from having a quote-unquote better quality of sender by doing this?
Yes, they do. And just as a side note to maybe bust a myth up front, we are not only acting in Germany. I don't know why everyone still thinks that CSA is only acting and plays a role in the German market, because our partner network is a much bigger one. But yes, what we've ever taken from the beginning is the legal standards and the data quality standards that have ever been applied to the German market. And for sure, some say to us, this is very strong criterias, and it's basically German oriented, which may be right. But if you follow it, you get a kind of insurance of a high quality of data, of practices. And when you apply them in other international markets, you automatically one step ahead of the others, because we have some kind of, strong rules.
We'll accept that bit of myth busting. I'm going to rephrase my next question slightly. But I mean, you're obviously based in Germany. I know you live in the beautiful city of Hamburg. And obviously you have a view on, email marketing, specifically in Germany and the German-speaking countries. When we published our deliverability benchmark report a few months ago, it actually showed that inbox placement rates in Germany are some of the highest in the world, 97%. And, for context, a country like the USA, inbox placement rates are in the low to mid 80s. So, coming back to that point that you were just making, even before GDPR, Germany effectively had GDPR. Do you think we can attribute some of that to the very high levels of deliverability we see in your country?
I personally would say yes. Yes, definitely. Because one fun fact, even though double opt-in, so confirmed opt-in, double opt-in, different meanings, same or different terms, same meaning, has ever been assumed as this is required by law. But there is even today no law anywhere, even in the GDPR, where it's saying you need to have double opt-in. But the Germans always thought, okay, it is required by law. I don't know why, but it is already a high entry into high quality data that doesn't avoid persuasive spam at all. Even though you have got a valid permission, you can run a completely strange email strategy and your subscribers start to complain. But it is already the initial step or the edit step to say, hey, it at least starts with higher data standards. And as we all know, email marketing is about data. And the better data you have, the easier it is to start and set up a proper marketing strategy. The technical criteria just came in step by step over the years, but it started with the legal stuff. And so, yes, I think it's coming back to that Germans love to follow rules. And even though it is not written down anywhere, and I think that was the starting point, and we still get the payback from there. That's definitely the case.
It reminds me of Canadian law too, where double opt-in or confirmed opt-in, it's pretty much universally adopted, not because it's in and of itself a legal requirement, but because you have to prove that express consent. So we've talked about COI, DOI, more acronyms for everybody. But let's talk about a couple of those tactics that senders use to reach this enviable position, right? Tactics that all senders in all countries can benefit from. What are some more examples of those best practices?
Using best practices for one step evolve. So we need to see how those best practices evolve. And it's always the job of a smart email marketer to be on top of them, to understand them and apply them as best as possible. Depends on the business, depends on the budget, depends on the possibility. No question. But it's basically that. This is a very broad buzzword. But for example, it is some best practices are low-hanging fruits. And I still see that, for example, double opt-in messages are not received or not even sent out in real time. So this is one simple and easy best practice. And just imagine if you go into a shop and you want to buy something, which is maybe a little more expensive than the pair of sport shoes, you get a warm welcome from the seller, you know? And why aren't we not sending this individual welcome stuff? And when I have a talk to a seller about my car or whatever good that I buy in the offline world, I get an individual talk and conversation about it onto my needs. And we have the technology in email marketing to apply that personalization, call it AI, call it whatever you want, but make use of it and combine it with data. Target groups and subscribers who are really interested into your products are sharing data with you directly or indirectly and make proper and serious use of it, not for spamming, but for creating valuable communication in those processes. And what I also learned over the time, it is not just only about sales promotions, daily newsletters, and here 10% discount and there 20% discount or buy one, get two, whatever. You can also use email marketing. Okay, you received your present or your good or whatever you bought at us. How is it going? How was your experience? So the whole service communication, what we call the transactional email stuff, is part of the whole email marketing story. And it is not always about selling in every email. It is just the touch point. And the more relevant it is to me and creates a good feeling on the consumer's side, the best it is for the future email marketing. So I can't nail it down to specific tactics, use this and that here and there. It is basically, before you send an email, take a step back and ask yourself, does that make sense what I implemented into my strategy? And does that create real value for your audience group? And then I would say everyone is able, or a smart email marketer is able, to create great strategies out of it and develop their own tactics.
Cool. So listen, I mean, we've talked quite a lot about best practices already, and I'm thinking there's another lens to look at this topic through, because in a lot of countries that we work with, the email marketing landscape is dominated by the Maggie, you know, Microsoft, AOL, Gmail, Yahoo. That's typically 80% of an email list. But in the DACH region, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, that profile of mailbox providers is very different. And it's regional mailbox providers like GMX, T-Online, WebDE. They own more than half the market between them. So when it comes to best practices, does this change the rules for senders? Is there anything specific that those providers want to see, or are best practices universal?
It's not a secret that the big four are dominating the market globally. And when you look at the regular conferences where all those guys are meeting up, that's where the local mailbox providers and the global mailbox providers meet. And it's basically to exchange information and to exchange trends. There is a reason why those big four are driving the pace, because they own the majority of traffic. So, sorry for using that word, but they see the majority of shit flying around. And it's totally fair when the local mailbox providers from every market, it's not just Germany. If I look into France, we've got Orange, we've got La Poste. If you look to Brazil, we've got BOL and all those guys. And there are more locals than just the German ones. And for sure, they learn from the experience from the big four. But due to the special requirements of their maybe smaller size, they do have some additional best practice limiters. It's basically down to connection and throughput settings, but the differences are not that big. The technology is equal. We are all sending emails through SMTP protocol, which follows the same rules, doesn't matter where you are on the world, and doesn't matter what email service you use. It comes down to, is that local mailbox provider already able to apply engagement rules like Gmail does or Microsoft does? And they are following that, and it's going to happen. And so, yeah, it is comparable. And if you follow the global best practice rules, I would say you've got 80 to 90% of the rent.
And now we're going to get into MOG. And just prepare yourselves, everybody, for what this next acronym is.
This is the greatest acronym ever. So come on, Danielle, tell our audience what MOG means.
MOG stands for Messaging Malware and Mobile Anti-Abuse Working Group.
Wow. She read that out.
I did read it out, guys. I could not have read that out. But think like M, if you're looking at it, you'll see M3. So it's M cubed, basically, messaging, malware, and mobile anti-abuse. And several of the German mailbox providers reference MOG standards in their best practice guidelines. Like Validity, the CSA has close involvement with MOG. So can you give us just a quick overview of the role that MOG plays in the email ecosystem, and then maybe an example of a MOG standard?
At that point, I can only talk from my side personally. MOG provides the same thing like we are doing with the CSA. It is a great platform that brings together the important senders and the important receivers from the market to sit together on a table, exchange expectations, and develop and protect the email ecosystem together. So that's basically what it is. I try to be at every MOG for the networking and to meet the guys there, to be ahead of new evolutions, to listen closely to everyone's needs, to understand in what direction are we currently moving, what challenges are mailbox providers seeing and senders having. And what I take back from MOG, and that was very similar between MOG and CSA, MOG does provide guidelines for best practices to resolve a certain issue or challenge. And that's what we try to do with our criteria as well. So it is very similar that, for example, TLS encryption or DKIM signing or DMARC adoption, this is what MOG is pushing for. MOG is much more known in the international markets, but we try exactly the same with either clear criterias or recommendations, but it's creating the platform and it's built on the exchange between the receivers and senders. Yeah, it's a constant process of, as you said, the spammers are doing the best job in sending emails. And it's always a kind of maybe chase or race, who's the one ahead of everyone.
Totally.
And I think MOG is the best platform where the important stakeholder and key parts of that email industry come together and exchange information. And we're going to do this. We are doing the same with our CSA summit. Due to COVID, we weren't able to do that, but we have that platform as well. Meet up with senders and receivers somewhere in Germany, mostly in Cologne. But there we have those contacts from Google, from Yahoo, from Microsoft as well. And we link them with the senders and providing workshops and doing exactly the same. So it is very important platform. And I love the networking. I enjoy it. And what I enjoy as well is bringing this global view about the email ecosystem back into the local markets. And I think that's what the French colleagues do as well, like the Italian colleagues, the British colleagues, you name them. And even though the Latin American colleagues take back this global impression and global changes to apply this to the local markets.
Absolutely. When we look at countries that have implemented new generation privacy laws, so thinking, you know, Europe, Canada, Brazil, we generally see better email performance in those countries, you know, stronger deliverability, higher open and click rates, etc. So, you know, does it fit with your thinking that, you know, factors like stronger consent and greater transparency and more choice, which these laws effectively impose, means that you're almost organically going to get better engagement and responsiveness from your email activity?
Yes. Clearly, yes. Because it's coming back to the old story of leading by example. And to me personally, German is not, maybe not the best example. To be honest, what I like the most is the Netherlands. Because, for example, in the Netherlands, an official administration is not allowed to send any email without proper authentication on SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. In Germany, it's just guidelines so far. And I saw emails flying around from official, as I said, from official government administrations not being properly authenticated. And things like clear consent and data protection, and the pressure to prove where you got a certain email address in your list from. Where is the source? How did you generate that? That is the important fundamental for every high-quality standard in email marketing. And that's why I'm not surprised at all when other countries, maybe not copycat it, but look at it and try to create similar things, they are going to be successful in terms of effectiveness of email marketing. And it's easier to distinguish between who's a spammer and who's a legit sender, but not following best practices, because that is still a fine line, right? And I think a unified legislation is a good way to start with. We still need to take a look at and need to be free and kind of liberal as we talk about the free and open SMTP protocol. Everyone can use email and communicate through that, but driving commercial success and earning money from it and getting money from others, that's a total different story. And that needs to have clear rules to protect the ones who do not have that much technical experience to figure out a phishing campaign, for example.
Okay. Bounce management is a topic that you have strong opinions on. So in a nutshell, what's wrong with the way that bounce handling works at the moment? And in an ideal world, how would you improve it?
I saw myself talking about bounces recently a lot, even at Morg. So that's true. Yeah. In a nutshell, I think we've got everything we need. We've got thousands and hundreds of guidelines, like for all the other standards as well. What we are currently, and that is the, from my point of view, the major pain point that we didn't resolve yet, is what is the clear expectation from the mailbox provider when they send to me certain bounds? So this is the missing piece. When I get a, I don't know, whatever bounds code, what do you want me, dear mailbox provider, to do that with that information or with that data? Because it's the email address that we're talking about. And rather than talking aside, I think it needs clear instruction, because everyone is using, or mailbox providers are using the bounds codes differently, even though they seem to be standardized and clearly defined, but they are used in different ways. And on the other hand, we need the commitment from the sender. Okay, yes, if the mailbox provider wants me to delete that record from my database, I do it, and not the kind of strange way that many CEOs still have in mind. Well, there have been hard bounces 5 years ago. Shall we retry them? We may save some data from... Come on, this is rubbish. This is stupid. You will not earn... The pennies you are earning there on that end will be burned directly in your sending reputation, and you will lose much more money than you get out of those 50 additional addresses that may come up there because the mailbox providers resigned the or reopened the possibility and the availability of email addresses. So to me, that's basically is it. Mailbox providers clearly say, delete it on that bounce code, for example, and the senders say, okay, we do it. And I think it will not going to work on additional guidelines and additional documents. We would need a service based on that, that is constantly maintained, like, for example, maybe from platforms like Morg or CSA or whoever. And mailbox providers make use of it as the central source of knowledge about what is the latest status of a bounce code, clear instructions, actions, descriptions, and the senders can call it as well and know right away what to do with that bounce code they received. So
yeah. I think it's essential. I mean, there's a lot of inconsistency there, and I think you're right to flag it up as a problem because, you know, nobody wants to go and suppress good records in good faith, you know, because they've received, you know, a false positive notification.
Right.
Important. Right. We're this has been such a good conversation, but we need to start wrapping up.
Guy, I'm going to let you ask the closing question today, because if it were up to me, I would just ask Seb to do his impression of a CEO talking about bounced addresses for like 20 minutes. So please, Guy, take it away.
You know, I was thinking about this because, I mean, you know the ones we've asked recently, Danielle, you know, what's the, you know, most embarrassing email address you've had and, you know, what's the most overhyped trend? But, you know, Seb, earlier in the conversation, you were talking about how you are truly an email life, you know, email marketing lifer. It's all you've ever done. And it's a pretty crazy industry. And, you know, as we get to know each other over the years, we give each other stupid names. And, you know, what's the craziest nickname a sort of your colleague or peer has given you over the years?
You have one specific nickname in your mind. And I'm currently thinking about, am I speak it out loud in English or in German language? And colleagues who may listen to that podcast may remind Schmetterling, which basically means butterfly. And it is because of a nice video that we've seen back in the days. But it comes back to you need to start with the tiny things. And even if it looks very small and very tiny, even if it's a tiny starting point, a tiny very first tactic, it is worth to do it because it grows and it has a multiplier effect. And it will be, if it's successful, it will be copied by others. And then you've got that butterfly effect. And that's what I strongly believe in improving the email ecosystem.
Seb the Schmetterling. It started out as a joke, but it was the perfect name. Right. So it's been such a pleasure chatting with you today. Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. And I think it's been great, you know, hearing about your market, the CSA. It's been a fascinating conversation. So I think it just remains to talk about our next episode. Danielle, do you want to fill our audience in?
Yeah, everybody, get ready for Spam House. Dun, dun, dun. I think they're going to hate that. But yes, join us next time to get into all things Spam House. And we can't wait. Thank you so much, everybody.
It's going to be awesome. Bye now.
Bye then.
Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours and see you next time.